I'm Ian McIntosh, and welcome to Track FC, your concise yet comprehensive thrice-a-week show. It's football fast, no faff, no rambling intros, no unwanted nonsense. Let's just get started. Tammy Abraham has signed for Aston Villa for £18.25 million. It's one of the biggest deals so far in this January transfer window, and one that might just have an impact on the title race, given that, yes, Aston Villa are still third and still level on points with Manchester City and still just 4 points behind Arsenal. And it's a return to Villa for Abraham, who was there on loan in the 2018-19 season. And I don't know if it's just a pre-pandemic era thing, but when I tried to remember that, it felt like a half-recalled dream that I couldn't quite place. I had the faintest feeling that Tammy Abraham playing for Aston Villa was something that had happened in a Football Manager save. But I did check. We're nothing if not thorough here. And yeah, 25 goals in 37 appearances in the Championship. I see it now. Abraham started at Stamford Bridge. He made a couple of appearances there before going out on a sensational loan spell at Bristol City, a decent one at Swansea, and then Villa. And then he went back home and scored 15 goals in that funny season when Frank Lampard had to play all the kids and Chelsea were briefly likeable. He signed up with Jose Mourinho for a Roman adventure in 2021 and did very well there too for a couple of years before an ACL injury banjaxed him in 2023. He's been on loan at AC Milan. He was doing quite well on loan for Besiktas, and now he's back at Villa Park with one eye on a place in the England team this summer where he hasn't featured since 2022. It's an interesting signing. It adds some serious experience to Unai Emery's squad, and assuming he settles in swiftly, some proper cover for Ollie Watkins. And it's another sign, if we even needed it, that this title race is not over yet. Now, here's a thing you may have missed. Brighton and Hove Albion have only won once in their last 10 Premier League games. On the 1st of December, they were 5th and only 3 points off second place. Now they're 12th and only 5 points above Nottingham Forest. So, what's gone wrong? Well, weirdly, not that much. This podcast doesn't do things lightly, so we watched the tape of Saturday's defeat to Fulham, and the Seagulls were, well, they were fine. They're still building up slowly from the back with that lovely little Donk van Hekker-Baliba triangle. They've still got an out ball for some pace on the flank through Mitoma. They've still got the experience, know-how and unprecedented double-figures scoring of Danny Welbeck. And they brought back Pascal Gross with some class in the middle. But they just cannot win games right now. But we only watch Brighton from time to time. The Athletic's Andy Naylor has watched them week in, week out for years. Andy, is there a problem here, or have they just been consistently unlucky?
Brighton consistently unlucky? I tend to subscribe to the theory that you make your own luck. The story of the season so far has been more one of consistently inconsistent. It's been pretty hard to know what to expect from Fabian Hertzler's side from game to game, and indeed during games for periods. The Fulham setback was as close to an authentic away performance since that 2-0 victory at Nottingham Forest late November that lifted them to fifth. They looked like they were going to win the game for long periods, ended up losing it because they gave away two bad goals. Charalampos Kostoulas, who'd come off the bench in the FA Cup victory at Manchester United, 18-year-old Greek forward, showed maturity with his game management at Old Trafford late on, protecting a 2-1 lead. Gave away a silly free kick in a dangerous position at Fulham that was punished in injury time by Harry Wilson. That is an indication of the nature of the Brighton squad. You've predominantly got a lot of young players with potential and a core of chiseled old pros to try to guide them through the ups and downs. And guess what? With young players, you get inconsistency. And that's what we're getting with Brighton. Let's not forget they also have a young head coach. Fabian Hertzler is only 32 years old. He is learning on the job. So you get the ups and downs. They're in this run, a bad run, if you like, just based on wins. But let's not forget a lot of those games are draws. They're the joint draw specialists in the Premier League this season with Sunderland and Bournemouth. One of those draws was at Manchester City. The defeats in this sequence have been, the other defeats apart from Fulham, have been against Arsenal and Aston Villa and Liverpool. Not exactly games you'd be expected to get results in. So overall, take a back step, 12th in the Premier League, through to a fourth round trip in the FA Cup at Liverpool, having knocked out Manchester United at Old Trafford. Hardly the end of the world, is it?
Andy Naylor is the Brighton correspondent for The Athletic, and if you head to their website, you can get a subscription. And you should get a subscription too, because it's absolutely excellent. Monday night championship leaders Coventry were beaten by relegation dogfighters Norwich. Is that weird? Well, not really. It's the championship, where famously anyone can beat anyone. It's a long season, these things happen, right? Right? Well, they're happening a lot to Coventry right now. Frank Lampard's side played 11 games in October and November, and they won 10 of them. Well, they've played 11 games since then, and they've won only four. They were 10 points clear at the top of the championship at the start of December. Now they're only 3 points clear. Something has gone awry over there, and I'm hoping that Simon Lillibury, host of That Cov Pod, can help me out here. Si, what's going on, and how are your nerves?
The big question, what is going wrong with Coventry City at the minute? Oh, it's a big one to answer and a tough one to answer right now. Struggling, to be honest, struggling away from home. I think it's six without a win away from home, and we're conceding an awful lot of goals. Not only a lot of goals, but a lot of chances. No clean sheets in six now. If you watch the game against Norwich, we are completely wide open. There's a massive gaping hole in the middle of midfield. We're the most open league leaders I think anyone's ever seen. We're quite easy to get at. Cole Rushworth's been brilliant in goal and keeping us in games and getting us over the line, but we're conceding too many chances to win games of football away from home, especially at home. Obviously, we beat Leicester and Millwall, which were two good performances. And, you know, at home, we are really good. If we win all of our home games, I think there's nine home games left, we'll finish on 85 points. And that's without winning any away games. So we don't have to be amazing to get promoted this season from now. We need to be good. We need probably another midfield addition coming towards the end of the January transfer window. Hopefully that will help us out and help plug a few of those gaps, because at the moment Matt Grimes is doing too much running and trying to cover too much space, and we're not scoring the amount of goals we used to score either at the start of the season. So how are my nerves? Oh, I'm getting a little bit shaky, but let's stay calm and hopefully everything will be all right.
That Cov Pod is available wherever you get your podcasts, and a link to it is included in the episode description of this very show, as is one for Simon's YouTube channel. Check that out too. It's the final night of the Champions League group stage tonight, and who can forget the excitement of last year's stunning denouement? Well, everyone. It was the dampest of damp squibs, and that's not really surprising given that this format was designed only to maximise profits and definitely not to maximise excitement. It's such a shame because I was no fan of the previous format with its lopsided group stage so hopelessly compromised by a coefficient policy that locked in the big clubs and punished the small ones to such an extent that if you couldn't confidently predict at least 13 of the 16 teams who went through, you were probably watching the wrong sport. But imagine if this new system only allowed the top 16 to qualify. How much fun would that be? Dortmund, Juventus, Inter, Atletico, Man City, they'd all be a bit nervous right now, all anxious to avoid immediate elimination. Instead, they're just trying to avoid the inconvenience of an extra two-legged tie. What I wonder, is how many people are actually invested in this outside of the supporters of the clubs directly involved. Now, this is just anecdotal evidence, so treat it as such. But I'm going out with three old friends tonight, the very cream of the Boswell's Comprehensive Schools class of 94, I might add, all football fans, and I said, should we pick a pub that's showing the football? Well, not one of them was bothered. One's Arsenal, one's Spurs. And you can understand his reticence, to be fair. One's West Ham, and they just weren't really bothered by this 18-game one-night mega-frenzy. So I asked social media what they thought, did a little survey, and here are the results. 12.4% of respondents said that the new Champions League was, and I quote, best format ever. 45.8% said the Champions League was, meh, it's fine, I guess. And 41.8% said it was rubbish. So that's 87.6% of people saying that the new Champions League is either rubbish or, meh, it's not a great response. But at least we'll have knockout games soon, and everyone likes knockout games. But if you are watching, it's all on the TNTs and the Discoveries. You can watch any game you want, and the same goes for the Europa League on Thursday. That was Track FC. It was Football Fast, No Faff, and it's here thrice a week, Monday, Wednesday and Friday. I've been Ian McIntosh. Your producer was Helena Fremantle. We will be back on Friday with a full weekend preview, and we'll see you then.